Hi, folks. I'm Richard Hill. Welcome to WPKN's Mic Check, where we explore global, national, and regional issues and their impact on our local communities. Mic Check takes its name from the 2011 Occupy Wall Street movement, where the human microphone was used to amplify the voices of people at mass demonstrations in the streets around in cities and towns around our country. And today we're going to be exploring many issues, actually, that are important to our state, with Lindsay Farrell, who is the executive director of the Working Families Party, Working Families Party of Connecticut. Lindsay, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you here. And what we're going to do today is actually talk about, your party's strategies in the state moving toward the 2018 elections. But let's just start by having you describe the work that the Working Families Party does in our state. And perhaps in that answer, you could include who does the term working families actually refer to in your description?
Sure. Well, we are an independent political organization. We're kind of half political party and half issue advocacy nonprofit. And we work on economic and racial justice issues around the state. So, things like, universal access to quality public education, fair wages, and decent workplace standards, like paid sick days and paid family leave, and things like that. And we came together through a bunch of labor organizations and community activists and community organizations to fight on those issues and to use the political system that we have to advance progress. So we do a few things. Our electoral strategy kind of has three components. One is we can run our own candidates. We're an independent political party, so sometimes we do that. We run people who are not Democrats or Republicans in local municipal races or in legislative races. Sometimes we work within the structure of the other political parties. So we have this thing called cross-endorsement here in Connecticut, which means that candidates can be endorsed by more than one party. We use this to incentivize Democratic candidates, usually, sometimes Republicans, although they've made it very difficult in recent years, to be good on our issues by earning our cross-endorsement. Then their name appears on the ballot twice, and independent voters who support our issues can vote for them on our line, and it tends to attract additional votes to their candidacy. And then the third way that we work to elect folks who are good on those issues that I talked about is through primaries, and a lot of Democratic primaries. Sometimes we have to take out a corporate Democrat with a more progressive Democrat. You asked who are working families. I think it's, we aim to be a broad coalition that's incredibly inclusive. So, we believe love makes a family. We believe that families are whoever people band together to take care of each other and make that work. We aim to be the political home for the 99%.
And actually, that sort of raises the question about the sort of economic divide that Connecticut is emblematic of. Income inequality, I believe we have some of the highest income inequality in the nation, and the United States has the highest income inequality on the planet Earth. So how does that play into this description of who are the working families?
Sure. I mean, we have some pretty severe challenges in Connecticut when it comes to economic inequality. You're right, we are always ranking somewhere in the top three or the top five, depending on the year, for states where there is the broadest gap between the wealthy in our state and the poorest in our state. We have one of the highest levels at which you are in the 1%, so to speak, meaning the highest income level to actually make that top crust there. It's always over about $600,000 a year for your household. And we also have some extraordinary pockets of poverty in our state. It tends to be concentrated in our cities, although that's increasingly not true in some of the other areas around our state, especially rural areas. And, you know, what it means is that there is a real struggle for access to political power within our state. You know, a lot of talking heads and political pundits, you know, frame these issues, economic issues and racial justice issues, as progressive, left versus right. But a lot of that comes down to who has access to power and who has influence over the politicians who make decisions and who doesn't. And the income inequality and the wealth inequality in our state have really also, I think, contributed to inequality in terms of access to political decision making.
Well, speaking of political decision making, how would you assess the performance of our state legislature, both Democratic and Republican, in this past year or two, culminating in the passage of a budget this fall, which by any measure compromised many of the progressive values, I believe, that you support?
Well, we don't like the budget. we haven't. I can't remember a time when our organization thought that the state budgets that were passed were, as a whole package, emblematic of our values of fairness and investment in our state. I think one of the things that we're seeing now is, in the way that this budget process unfolded, is what it looks like when Republicans in the state have a little bit of political power. You know, we've seen at the federal level their inability to embrace or pass fiscal policy that helps working families in the middle class, and now we're starting to see that in Connecticut in a very painful way. That being said, you know, there's a range of Democrats in Connecticut. There are some very strong progressive folks who really do stand up for working people and the working poor and middle class, and there are folks who are more sympathetic with a corporate agenda, who are very close with the business lobby in this state, the Connecticut Business and Industry Association, and other lobbying organizations, and listen to them. And unfortunately, I think that side of the party has had an unfair amount of influence on budgets in recent years. So, you know, we're frustrated with a budget that doesn't really deliver for working people, that has unfair health care and education cuts. We believe strongly that the super wealthy, of which there are many in this state, as I was just describing, should step up and pay more of a fair share, as they do in our neighboring states. Our top marginal rates for super wealthy households, $1 million households, is around 2% lower than it is in neighboring states of New York and New Jersey, and for that reason, we've been unable to find financial stability at the state level, and it makes it much harder to make the kind of investments that are going to make our cities vibrant and make our our economy stable and able to grow.
Speaking of this issue of taxing wealthy people at a higher rate, many Democrats in Connecticut, some that I'm acquainted with, even in that represent my town of Branford and nearby towns, argue that raising taxes on wealthy people would literally scare them out of the state and leave us with a huge hole in our revenue, because they argue that the millionaires, the folks in Fairfield County and Greenwich and places like that, pay a huge portion of our actually contribute a huge portion of money to our coffers through their taxes. Is there a counter argument that we can wage against these folks who are continually defending the wealthiest among us?
Well, the data doesn't support that myth, And there was just an article, I believe it was published by The Guardian just a couple weeks ago, but, you know, the latest in a series of publications and studies that have come out about this issue. If that were true, you know, as I said, the marginal rates on super wealthy households are much higher in several of our neighboring states, especially so in New York and New Jersey, and they have plenty of wealth there, and you know, they're not known for super wealthy families picking up and leaving from those states, right? So anecdotally, you know, we hear from corporate lobbyists, and we hear from you know, some legislators that, oh, I know this family that's leaving, I know these people who are leaving, but the data doesn't actually support that. What the data does support is that the folks who have extraordinary wealth, you know, they often are finding new and more creative ways, or delaying cashing out investments. They're finding ways to get around being taxed fairly. And so that is an issue. And I think what that speaks to is a need in our state to diversify our economy. We are so incredibly reliant on insurance and on finance. And, you know, it's just not healthy for our local economy. And we need to be able to make the investments that are going to make other businesses grow and, you know, maximize the advantages that we have. We have an excellent workforce. We have excellent education facilities and institutions. And we need to diversify our economy so that we aren't relying on these same pockets of wealth. That being said, we still should be treating them fairly and taxing them so that they are contributing in a way that they should be to our economy.
We're speaking with Lindsay Farrell, who is the executive director of the Working Families Party of Connecticut. And we're talking, obviously, about the electoral situation, the economic situation, and strategies for remediating the problems in our state and putting forth progressive policies that could be in play in the 2018 elections, which are actually in play already, right? Because as soon as that 2017 municipal election was over, we hit the streets and everybody started talking about 2018. So before we check in on what your strategies are going to be going forward for 2018, can you give us your insights about, like, why do you think the Republican Party made so many gains in recent statewide elections here, so that, to the point where we now have almost complete parity of Democrats and Republicans in the state legislature, and Democrats no longer... You know, governorship is now being threatened, Democratic control, that is, and Democrats really don't have the leverage to pass or even consider to get out of committee some progressive ideas that are coming forth from some of the more working families-oriented legislators. So what do you think is the reason for those changes?
Sure. Well, I think it's because voters want to know what they're voting for, and it's been difficult to see a consistent message from Democrats for a while in Connecticut. You know, we've had this cycle, you know, year after year of difficult budget problems, and a lot of that is because of bad choices that politicians and other leaders made decades ago, and part of it is that we just didn't have the stomach, apparently, to solve the problems by raising revenue and raising sustainable sources of revenue years ago. And that's taken a political toll, I think, on Democrats, because they are the majority party, the party that's expected to solve that problem. Like I said, there is a huge range of Democrats, right? There are folks who we can really look to stand up for fair wages and for economic policies that are going to put money back in the pockets of people who are working hard and trying to make ends meet. But there are also a lot of Democrats who, you know, are very good on social issues. You know, they believe in an end to gun violence, and they believe in marriage equality and women's health care rights. But they participate in the shift of wealth that we have seen upwards in this country over the last several decades, in a way that's really troubling to a lot of voters and confuses them about what the Democratic Party stands for. So I think that there is a broad realization among a lot of Democrats that is an issue that needs to be addressed, and I think we're going to start I'm hopeful, I'm optimistic that we're going to start to see working towards the elections next fall, you know, a stronger message about policies that are going to make it possible for people to work and take care of their families. So, you know, paid family and medical leave, access to health care, affordable health care, access to higher education without debt that's affordable for families, things like that. I've always seen our role, I think we believe our role is to push politicians to embrace those kinds of issues. And there's been a real political consequence to not doing so that I think is starting to get people's attention.
Yeah, well, I think it's also interesting that there's a real sort of divide, I think, between the small towns, rural areas in Connecticut, the central regions of Connecticut, maybe the Northeast, in terms of red loyalties and blue loyalties. And there are many districts in Connecticut that are red or have turned red recently. Meanwhile, you know, our big cities seem to be the blue districts, and the populations there are able to elect our senators, our Democratic senators, and more progressive federal representation. Do Democrats have any hope, or I should say progressives, working family candidates, have any hope of making inroads in the red districts, the central Connecticut, these valley areas and Northeast and other areas that tend to be red in our state?
Well, the interesting thing about that is that there were, I believe it's 22 towns that just flipped from Republican control to Democratic control in the elections this past November, just a few weeks ago. And, you know, those were towns that you're describing, right? Areas that are suburban or rural that have been under Republican control. The thing that I think is important for a lot of voters to understand is that even though the Republican Party has not been formally in control in Connecticut through the legislature or the governor's office for some time, they still have a lot of political power and are driving the narratives that we're hearing about our state budget and other issues, and they're in control of a lot of the, you know, decision making because they have the ability to filibuster. You know, they have the ability to pick off a few corporate Democrats to get votes done, just as we saw with the really, really draconian budget that was passed in September that wasn't balanced but included, you know, terrible things like $300 million cut from UConn and the elimination of our clean elections program and things like that. So, again, I think this is about two things for the Democrats. One is to tell a story about what their leadership wants to deliver and what they stand for. And I think that is turning around, and we've seen that in the last election in November. But the other thing is activism and engagement and people being willing to have conversations with their neighbors and put the time in to knock doors and make phone calls and get that message out. And I think people have been very inspired to do that lately. And again, I'm hopeful and I'm optimistic that kind of engagement is going to only ramp up going into next year.
We're speaking with Lindsay Farrell, who's the executive director for the Working Families Party of Connecticut. And our conversation will end at 6 p.m. and thereupon will begin the Ralph Nader Radio Hour, which is here every Sunday at 6 p.m. This program will be archived and turned into a podcast shortly thereafter. And you can find those at WPKN.org in the upper left-hand corner, the homepage. Look for the podcast link. Click a couple of clicks and you will be at SoundCloud, and you can drop down a mic check in our playlists and find a whole bunch of interesting issues discussed there, including this one. Talk a little bit about what you folks did to actually contribute to the flipping of some of those towns, those 22 towns you mentioned in the 2017 municipals that just happened. I know friends of mine who were boots on the ground I live in Brantford, they were in East Haven, your Working Families Party was going door to door. And what did you learn in that process about, let's say, the trickle down effect of Donald Trump in this whole state local political landscape?
Well, Rich, you should know we don't believe in trickle down
in any form, in any subspecies.
Well, so you mentioned East Haven, which is, I think, an interesting example. In the aftermath of Trump being elected president, you know, we've always had a base of voters and some loyal activists around the state, but after that, folks came together and said, we would like to start some formal chapters, you know, formal clubs in some areas so that we are, you know, communicating and organizing together on a very regular basis. And the New Haven area is one of the places where one of those chapters started. And they have been doing a lot of door-to-door in East Haven and in Wallingford, not even for candidates, just on issues. And they've been talking about the budget issues that we that we've been talking about on the show tonight. They've been talking about paid family and medical leave and some other things. And, you know, talking to just voters just about the issues, they were finding that a lot of people who admitted that they voted for Trump also were connecting with a very progressive position on revenue and budget and taxation issues and things like that. So, you know, the reason I want to talk about that is because it's not even about electing a specific candidate in this case. That was a lot of work and a lot of communication between people with their neighbors just about issues. And that changes the conversation, and it has an impact on what voters are thinking about and what they're paying attention to as they go into the next election. And it's an important piece, I think, of how we can kind of, you know, push back against the Trump presidency and the Republican agenda at the federal level, which is, you know, trickling down, again, I guess we do believe in trickle down, which is carrying down to a lot of the local politics, the state politics, and the municipal issues in our state. You know, the other thing is there are a lot of really great candidates who are getting involved now who haven't been involved before. You know, a couple of races that we worked on that we won seats through were Shante Brody, who ran for Board of Education in Hartford, and Rose Race, who ran for City Council out in Windham. You know, two women who had never run for elected office before, who were kind of engaged. They went to City Council meetings or Board of Education meetings. You know, Rose was active in her union. She's an AFT member. She's a public school teacher union, but who had never, you know, had never put their name on a ballot before and never really thought about doing that. And that, I think, we saw, whether it's working families candidates or Democratic candidates, all over Connecticut, and that was a crucial piece of a lot of these towns being flipped from Republican to Democratic control, was new talent, new people who are stepping up and saying, you know what, I'm tired of yelling at the TV screen, and I'm tired of just, like, getting angry at Facebook, and I'm actually going to run for office, and I'm going to talk to the neighbors that I have and the voters in the district or the town where I live about what my values are and try to motivate, you know, my friends and family to work with me to get me elected, and they were successful in a lot of places all over the state.
Are you planning to mount primaries this year in any districts yet? Have you figured that out yet? And let's say people listening in towns or districts that are part of our listening audience are considering we need to primary that representative or that state senator. Should they call Working Families Party for help?
They should absolutely reach out to us. We do trainings on the fundamentals of running a campaign, how to put together a field program, how to, you know, raise the basic funds that you would need to run a competitive campaign, things like that. And they should reach out to us. You can find us online at workingfamilies.org/Connecticut. There will probably be primaries that the party is making the endorsement in and supporting a candidate and doing work for. Like I said, you know, our strategy is three pieces mostly. It's we run independent candidates when we have to. We cross-endorse major party candidates, mostly Democrats, when it makes sense to do so because those candidates are strongest on our issues, and this is the way that we're going to be able to put somebody who's going to embrace our values into office. And sometimes we run primaries to hold corporate Democrats accountable. You know, the budget that was passed in September, the Republican budget that had some very, very severe cuts and was very damaging to middle-class workers in our state, as well as other workers. I believe it hurt the earned income tax credit. Again, it took away the public financing of elections that takes corruption out of our electoral system. There were corporate Democrats who voted for that budget, and they need to answer to voters for that. In some cases, we just need to replace folks who are willing to vote for policy like that. So, you know, I don't want to get into specifics yet. We are looking for candidates. We have some of these districts. We're looking for folks in others. And, you know, for anybody who wants to get involved in a campaign like that, check us out and contact us, you know, whether you want to run for office or if you just want to help out on something like that. I hope you will reach out to us.
Absolutely. And we'll give that web address once more before we go. It's workingfamilies.org/CT?
Slash Connecticut.
Connecticut. Workingfamilies.org/Connecticut. Mm-hmm. And is there a phone number that you would like to give out?
It's 860-523-1699.
860-523-1699. 1699. Very good. So as we close here, why don't you bullet point for us the three most important issues that you're going to be promoting that you want candidates to support in order to win an endorsement from the Working Families Party?
Yes. Top three. So I would say, you know, we have got to have a fair approach to these budget problems. They're not going away yet because we have not selected sustainable revenue solutions. So, you know, candidates have to be willing to ask for wealth from those who have the most of it to help balance the budget and stop doing it all on the backs of low wage workers and middle class state employees. The next is, I would say, immigration rights. There will probably be some form of asking for what's called institutional aid for Dreamers here in our public university and college system. You know, there are folks who are trying to get a degree, trying to go to school here in Connecticut. You know, they were brought here young and have, you know, lived their lives in the United States and are, you know, very much part of the fabric of our families and our communities and our economy. They pay into a financial aid system that they are not allowed to access, and it's just so fundamentally unfair that they don't have the same access as all the other students who are also paying into that system. So this is about, you know, training and educating and supporting, you know, the next round of entrepreneurs and doctors and innovators that our economy is going to rely on in Connecticut, and we want to give those kids the same opportunities. And then the third one I would say is paid family and medical leave. New York, Rhode Island, New Jersey, other states have passed a paid family and medical leave program so that when you are very sick or somebody in your family is very sick or there's an arrival of a baby, you're not worried about making ends meet and paying the bills and putting food on the table in addition to worrying about the health of yourself or your family. And this is another thing that we really need to do if our economy is going to remain competitive with our neighbors because, you know, if you're a young family or somebody who's worried about aging parents or something like that, and you're forced, you know, you're given the choice between going to a state that has that security and that protection or staying in Connecticut where, you know, it's up to you to try to figure it out all by yourself. You know, it's a very appealing program to go somewhere else for. So I would say those are three things that are pretty important to us right now.
Well said, Lindsay. And I want to thank Lindsay Farrell, Executive Director for the Working Families Party of Connecticut, for being with us here on Mic Check today. And good luck. And we will certainly be in touch with you and get more updates as your strategies become something you want to reveal to us and our listening audience.
Okay.
Lindsay, thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having us.
Take care. Goodbye.
Okay, bye.
You are tuned to WPKN in Bridgeport, 89.5 FM, and streaming online at WPKN.org.